Thank you, Brian. If you'll open to Genesis chapter 40, that's where we'll be tonight. Discouragement, it has been said, is one of the greatest, if not the greatest, tool of Satan. C.S. Lewis wrote that in his writings, and I think that my own personal experience has borne that out. I think that looking back over my life, that there are a few things beyond discouragement that have made me just want to throw in the towel and give up. Discouragement can be a terrible thing. If anyone ever had a right to be discouraged, it had to be Joseph. He began his life as the pampered son of a wealthy father, but at age 17, everything headed south. He was sold into slavery by brothers who hated him. He had just recovered in the house of Potiphar, where he served as a slave, when he was lied about and was thrown into prison. And there he would remain for years until he turned 30 years of age. In Psalm 105, verse 18, we have a testimony there by the psalmist about those years in prison. And it says, "They bruised his feet with shackles. His neck was put in irons." What a terribly discouraging way to spend the best years of your life. Well, we want to use Joseph tonight as an example. And for all who are discouraged or have been discouraged or who will be discouraged, we want to just notice several observations about Joseph during this potentially most discouraging time of his entire life. First of all, he maintained a sense of responsibility through all of this. He arrived a slave in Egypt, was sold to Potiphar, and look what he did. Look in chapter 39, back up to 39, the first six verses. It says, "Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt. Potiphar, an Egyptian, who was one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him there. The Lord was with Joseph, and he prospered, and he lived in the house of his Egyptian master. And when his master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord gave him success in everything he did, Joseph found favor in his eyes and became his attendant. Potiphar put him in charge of his household, and he entrusted to his care everything he owned. From the time he put him in charge of his household and of all that he owned, the Lord blessed the household of the Egyptian because of Joseph. The blessing of the Lord was on everything Potiphar had, both in the house and in the field. So he left in Joseph's care everything he had. With Joseph in charge, he did not concern himself with anything except the food he ate." Joseph got down there, and he adopted a good attitude, and he worked hard, and he trusted the Lord. But that didn't last long. You know what Potiphar's wife did. He went from slave in the household of Potiphar to prisoner. But when he got into prison, it's interesting because in the same chapter, we see that he didn't change his approach to life. In chapter 39, down in verse 21, we read these words. "But while Joseph was there in prison, the Lord was with him, and he showed him kindness and granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warden. So the warden put Joseph in charge of all those held in the prison, and he was made responsible for all that was done there. The warden paid no attention to anything under Joseph's care because the Lord was with Joseph and gave him success in whatever he did." Boy, what a guy. He just like cream rose to the top. He went from being a model slave in the house of Potiphar to being a model prisoner. He was the kind of employee, the kind of slave, the kind of prisoner that any leader would love to have at his disposal. Not only did he maintain a sense of responsibility, he also maintained a sense of concern and kindness for those around him. In chapter 40, we read about two of his fellow prisoners. And there in verse 1, it says, "Sometime later, the cupbearer and the baker of the king of Egypt offended their master, the king of Egypt. Pharaoh was angry with his two officials, the chief cupbearer and the chief baker, and he put them in custody in the house of the captain of the guard, in the same prison where Joseph was confined. The captain of the guard assigned them to Joseph, and he attended them. After they had been in custody for some time, each of the two men, the cupbearer and the baker of the king of Egypt, who were being held in prison, had a dream the same night, and each dream had a meaning of its own. When Joseph came to them the next morning, he saw that they were dejected. Now, he could have said to men like that, who sat there dejected, "You fellows think you have problems. You haven't seen anything. Wait till I tell you what happened to me." But he didn't do that. He put his own troubles aside and he sought a way to help these two men. Now, I don't think I have to tell you that that's a pretty amazing attitude for a 28-year-old young man to exhibit. Through it all, he consistently spoke of his faith in God. In verse 8, they told him that they had dreams, and they said there's no one to interpret. And Joseph said, "Do not interpretations belong to God?" He continued to give God the credit for everything that happened. Well, they told him their dreams. The cupbearer said, "I had a dream and I saw three vines, and they budded and they bloomed and they produced clusters of grapes. And in my dream, I squeezed those grapes into Pharaoh's cup." And Joseph, being told by God, said, "Well, that's easy. That means in 3 days, you're going to be back in Pharaoh's palace, and you're again going to be taking care of Pharaoh. You'll be restored to your former position." Well, the baker heard that, and he said, "Well, I had a dream too." Hoping for good news from his dream, he said, "I dreamed that I had three baskets of bread on my head, and birds came down and landed on the basket and ate all the bread out of the basket." And Joseph said, "Well," he said, "yours doesn't turn out so well. In 3 days, you will be executed by Pharaoh, and the birds will come and eat the flesh from your body." You know, Joseph, again, spoke with candor as a young man. And this is hard even for someone who has wisdom of years to speak honestly and candidly, especially when delivering bad news to someone. He spoke truthfully even when the message was a hard one. He didn't beat around the bush. He didn't sugarcoat it. It's like the man who was hired to write the biography of a wealthy woman. And he discovered in the course of tracking her history that her great-great-grandfather had been executed in Sing Sing prison in the electric chair. And wanting to be diplomatic in the way he put that in her book, telling her life, he finally came up with a way to do it. And he said, her great-great-grandfather occupied a powerful chair in one of the nation's most famous institutions. Joseph didn't have to sugarcoat it or beat around the bush. He just told the man straight. And I don't know how you are, but I want people to shoot straight with me. And Joseph was a straight shooter. He exercised amazing tenacity. He asked that cupbearer when he gave him his interpretation. He said, 3 days, you're going to be back in the palace. And he says in verse 14, "When all goes well with you, remember me and show me kindness and mention me to Pharaoh and get me out of this prison." Well, in 3 days, the man was taken out of the prison, and Joseph must have been delighted. His opportunity now was at hand for release. And then a week went by. And then 2 weeks went by. And then a month. And 2 months. And 6 months. And a year. I don't know at what point Joseph finally gave up on that long shot that he had of being released from prison. But 2 years passed. And it was obvious that he had been forgotten by that cupbearer. Now, that would have broken most men. For Joseph to have gone through all that he had from age 17, now here he is ready to celebrate his 30th birthday, and he's in prison with no hope on the horizon. Now, tonight I just want to give any of you who are here tonight who are discouraged in any way about anything, if you're discouraged tonight, here's some homework for you to take home. And I want us to look just at three lessons, or you can call them three assignments for the way you're to act when you're discouraged. Okay, here they are. Number one, if you are discouraged, keep performing your duty. Keep doing the things that you know God wants you to do and expects you to do. You know, the temptation when we become discouraged for me at least, just to call in sick, to coast, to pull back, and just become disengaged in life. But that only compounds the problem, because that makes you feel guilty and feel badly about yourself when you're not pulling your weight and you're not doing what you know is right. Keep going through the motions. I'll just confess to you, and I've said this to some of you before, even though I'm a preacher, I don't always feel like coming to church. There are Sundays when I just think, oh, me, I've got to get up and get dressed and go up there and preach, and I don't feel like I've got a very good sermon, and I don't feel like going, and I don't feel like smiling, and I don't feel like being friendly, and I just don't want to go to church. And sometimes I get up here in the pulpit, and this is rare, but this is true. Sometimes I get up here and I think, I'd rather be out there. Why don't you let me go out there and sleep and somebody else come up here and preach, you know? I don't always feel like doing this. But I do know what God has asked of me. God has asked me to be prepared in season and out of season. God has said to me, don't forsake the assembly. God has said to me, don't grow weary in well-doing. And so sometimes you've just got to go through the motions and do what you know is right. And then later on, the feelings will change. And I can tell you this, in all honesty, times when I felt that way and where I've just had to make myself get up and keep going, I always am glad that I've done it. I can't think of a single time when I felt like that after I left on the way home, that I still would have said, you know, I wish I'd stayed home in bed. I don't feel that way anymore. I'm always glad that I put forth the effort and did that. A second assignment here for any who are discouraged. Number one, keep on performing your duty. Number two, look for someone else to encourage. Joseph helped those two men who were despairing with him there in prison. And there are restorative powers in helping and encouraging a fellow human being, even when you're deeply discouraged yourself. Dr. William Steigen was deeply discouraged and depressed, and he related an incident in his life. He said that he was so discouraged he had to just force himself to put one foot in front of another. And he forced himself one day to write a note to an old high school teacher from many years previous, because one thing he didn't lose his interest in reading books, and that interest first was born under the tutelage of that old high school teacher. So he wrote that teacher a note, didn't want to do it, but he knew he needed to do something, wrote that teacher a note expressing appreciation for his love of literature. And a few days later, he received this note back. Dear Willie, my old heart was deeply touched by your note of gratitude. In all my years of teaching, you were the first student who has ever written to thank me. I will cherish your note for the remainder of my life. He was so overcome by that response that he began to think of all the people that he owed debts of gratitude to, and he began to write them notes. And over the next month, he said he wrote over 500 notes of appreciation to people that had made a difference in his life, and he was cured from his depression and discouragement. Are you discouraged? Do you want to get better, or do you want to just wallow in your self-pity and in your misery? If you want to get better, find someone else to encourage, and you will be the recipient of the encouragement. In 2 Corinthians chapter 1, verses 3 and 4, Paul wrote, "Praise be to the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of compassion and the God of all comfort, who comforts us in our troubles so that we can comfort those in any trouble with the comfort we ourselves have received from God." God comforts us so we can use that as a blessing to comfort others. Okay, the third thing, number one, keep on going, keep performing your duty. Number two, look for someone else to encourage. And thirdly, place your trust completely, totally in God and in nowhere else. Joseph's brothers had let him down. Potiphar had let him down. That cupbearer had let him down. But God would not let him down. Now, we're an advantage. We know the end of the story. We know how wonderfully God came through for Joseph. And we know how Joseph was elevated and how he was used to save his own people. We know the whole wonderful end of that story. But Joseph didn't. On his 30th birthday, he sat in that dark prison not knowing but what he'd spend another 30 years right where he was. So the question is this: will we be faithful even when we can't see the end of our story? You might be deeply discouraged right now and you might not know what's ahead, but God will be faithful. Even when it doesn't seem to make sense, God has promised He will be faithful always. If you're a Christian, it will always have a happy ending. A 6-year-old boy was born with a birthmark on his face, and he never really was bothered much by it in his early years because he was affirmed and loved by his parents. But on that first day of school, what his mother feared would happen actually did happen, and he came home in tears, relating cruel and hurtful things that other students had said to him about that mark on his face. And many, many years later, as an old man, Dr. Charles Eliot retired as the president of Harvard University. And he told that story about his first day at school. And he said, you know, of all the professors I've had and all the learning that I've experienced, the greatest lesson of all was the lesson I learned that day from my mother when I came in tears from school. And she said, son, there are some things that you can't change in life. You must simply accept them and go on. You know, for the Christian, we know that if we will do that with our trust implicitly in God, that things will turn out so much better than we could ever have imagined. In the midst of discouragement, we're all tempted to ask the question, why? And why me? And at some point, we need to move on to the more mature question, which is, what would you have me do, Lord, in spite of these circumstances? You know, it was Job, another man who dealt with crippling discouragement, who gave the right reply. And it was this: even though he slay me, yet will I trust him. God honors that kind of faith. Look at the story of Joseph, providing encouragement for us all these many years later. What a man. He's one of those I want to meet when I get to heaven. Tonight, if you're discouraged, if you need prayer, tonight, if you're here and you're not a Christian, we would love to see you make your life right with God. If you need to come, we invite you to come as we stand and sing.